And good evening to everybody on Overtime via YouTube. Did we all make it? I'm here. Kyle, are you there?
Trying to be, yeah.
Okay. Rob, Gila?
We're here.
Okay. Yeah. Alex, where'd Alex go? Alex is missing. Huh. Okay. Well, Alex has been abducted by aliens, apparently. Oh, there he is. Alex, nice of you to join us. Can you hear us?
I can hear you loud and clear. I had to get myself, you know, a drink.
Oh,
a basement.
Well, good for you. And Greg, I know that you have to go. You have to feed the dogs or something. What are they expecting right now?
The dogs are hungry, and I need to participate in the evening feeding and cleanup and all that sort of thing. We're not going mushing today, but I think tomorrow will be the mushing day, because those temps are finally getting below freezing where they belong. And by the way, you asked earlier about the weather. The warm-up last week, it was the first time we'd seen temperatures above freezing since October. And we literally had our interior and external wood-burning stoves going continuously 24 hours a day since October. So it was really quite the warm-up, and we're looking forward to getting back into wintry conditions.
Wow. And, you know, for those who haven't experienced it, I'm sure most people haven't, the feeding ceremony is a sight to behold. How long does it take?
Well, for the evening, we take usually 2 to a little bit more than 2 hours, and that includes letting all the dogs run around, and we do it in sort of groups because there's a couple dogs that don't get along, but all the dogs get to run around and socialize. Otherwise, they spend their day in a pen with two or three of their best friends. But we let them all run around and socialize, clean up any dog debris in the yard, and then also of course, feed. And the feeding system in the wintertime is a bucket system. So we don't give them water because the water just freezes, water in the bowls. But we give them a watery soup, which includes some meat, some kibble, and we just go around with the buckets and give everyone their evening food. And they eat it up. A dog, typical to any dog, they eat it up within about 30 to 90 seconds. They'll eat that, and then strangely it gets very quiet afterwards, except for the howl.
Howl.
Ian and Kyle have heard the evening howl, and we have a couple of pack leaders that love to howl. Some of them like to do it in the middle of the night. Some of them like to do it in the afternoon. But after mealtime is very typical. Howling is a happy occasion. So after dinner, typically one or two dogs will take up the howl, and everyone will howl just for maybe a minute to 2 minutes, just to express their thanks and satisfaction with the meal.
Well, we started howling too when we were there, because it is contagious and you just sort of get caught up in it.
Yeah, it feels good.
It's a happy thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a very happy thing. And it's sort of a gratitude that I think dogs are showing. So you must get to that. We look forward to seeing that again. And it's a kind of magic that's so hard to describe. But it's so amazing that that's the world that you're involved in.
It's a lifestyle. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in New York City, grew up on Long Island, so I know that lifestyle too. And it's just different. And being in the cold, having the dogs, being in the middle of nowhere, we're on a huge hill overlooking Lake Le Berge, which, if you know the cremation of Sam McGee, that is the lake that the poem takes place on by Robert Service. So we're in an area that has just a tremendous history, a tremendous outdoor spirit, and is not at all like living in a metropolitan area. But we enjoy it quite a bit.
Did I send you the song, The Cremation of Sam McGee, by Debbie McClatchy? I know I sent you one of the Robert Service. She did two of them on an album. So I don't know if I sent you the Sam McGee song or a different one. It's about people freezing.
No, you did.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the Cremation of Sam McGee, and set to music, basically. I can't recall. I don't think it was the exact poem. I have a feeling it was more or less about the poem, some of the words from the poem. It was a great song, and I actually have a picture of Robert Service and his wife on our wall, which I need to scan and get into Wikipedia, because it's not a picture that I've seen anywhere else, and it seems to be in the public domain. So it should be... should be shared more widely.
And just quickly, who was Robert Service?
Robert Service was a famous poet, and he was someone that wrote poems about a variety of things. but a lot of it was of a northern theme. He spent time in the Yukon, and that was one of his themes. And there's a pretty famous poem of his, probably the most famous poem, called The Cremation of Sam McGee, which is about a, I can't recall if he was a miner or something else, but he was someone that was in Yukon, working and living, and was always cold, because it's cold, even in summertime, it's not all that warm. And, always cold. And this isn't too much of a spoiler, since it's a, you know, pretty old poem, but in the end, the cremation of Sam McGee, he dies, he's cremated, and suddenly he actually feels warm, and he's just so happy about that. I don't think there was howling involved, but you can imagine that might have followed in another version of the poem.
Yeah, the other song has to do with somebody named, I think, Bill McGee, who the only way he could be transported out of the cabin where he froze to death was to have his arms and legs sawed off. It's another Robert Service poem, apparently. There's a theme here.
A lot of happy themes there. Yeah, a lot of happy themes.
I can hardly wait to
tell you. I mean, you mentioned before how different it is. You know, in New York City, when it's, you know, in the 30s and it's windy and it's sleeting, it is cold. There's no doubt that it's cold. I don't belittle that at all. But when it's 30 or 40 degrees colder, which happens all the time in Yukon, it's a different sort of cold. And the good news is that it's usually not raining or sleeting and slushing, so you don't get all that ugly wetness that makes you so cold in New York and so miserable. But on the other hand, if you're not wearing gloves, you're not wearing a hat, if the wind is up, you can get frostbite. You can get hands that won't even move after just a couple of minutes. It's just a totally different type of cold. And when you finally get down to the 40 below, which is where Celsius and Fahrenheit are the same, at 40 below, it's actually an even more different type of cold. And at 40 below, for example, well, of course, you might have seen the experiment where you can take a glass of boiling water, throw it in the sky, and it automatically goes from liquid to gas, right? So it just puffs into a gaseous cloud. It's a fantastic experiment. But in addition, at that cold temperature, stuff that's not fragile is suddenly fragile. So, for example, an unbreakable comb becomes quite fragile at that temperature. Electronic components that normally are like solid-state, surface-mount type of things and, you know, very robust suddenly become brittle and fragile. Makes you appreciate what they do with sending stuff to Mars and whatnot through outer space, where it's so much colder than that even. But anyway, 40 below is just unbelievable compared to a 30 degree day. Because consider it's 70 degrees different, which is the difference between a 30 degree day in New York and a 100 degree day in New York. So if you can imagine going from 30 degrees to 40 below zero, the same difference, it's equally as different feeling to your body. Of course, it's amazing that the dogs just do fine in 40 below. Most of them. There's a couple that are maybe not as well suited to the cold temps. Dogs do just fine at that temperature. People, you got to bundle up.
Uh-huh. Alex, you had a question?
Yeah. Well, first a comment, and then to build off of.
And we have to let Greg go too after that, because the dogs are hungry.
You have a phone call too.
They are.
Well, I hadn't realized that you were from Long Island. I guess nobody's perfect, huh?
I was born in Montreal and was there until I was about eight, and then moved with my family from Montreal when I was just 8 years old, from Montreal to Port Washington on Long Island, and was there until I went off to college after high school.
Oh, interesting. I see you had too much culture in Montreal. You needed to tone it down a little bit, I guess. Go over to Port Washington.
The bagels are good. The bagels are good in Montreal, but not as good as New York.
Yeah, I will tell you, though, about the 40 below. So I used to live in Vermont. I went to law school in Vermont, and I've been in 40 below in Montpelier, and I had a situation where I was trying to leave to drive back to New York at about 4 o'clock in the morning, which is about a six-hour drive back to Long Island, actually. And it was about 45 below zero at that time. It was really, really cold, and the ignition block in my car, just like you said, things start acting weird at that temperature. I couldn't turn it. It was completely frozen. And I spent about 45 minutes in the driveway of the car trying to turn the key over into the ignition block. And it was a 1992 Geo Prism. So it was a very old car by any stretch of the imagination, even for the years that I were in law school. So what I wound up having to do was take an extension cord out of the house, a very long extension cord, connect a hairdryer to it, and heat up the ignition block in the car with the hairdryer just to turn over the engine. And that took about a half an hour. So, I mean, things really do go nuts. So I'll never forget that experience. And you know
Indeed.
It's that cold. When you go outside, you take that breath, and you feel your nose hairs freeze.
That and also if you touch metal. For example, I made the mistake when we lived in Alaska of going to pump gas and just grabbing the gas thing. And it wasn't even that cold. It was maybe 10 or 20 below. And I actually got instant frostbite on my fingers. I had to wear bandages, and I had, you know, actual damage to my fingers.
Wow.
After touching for just a fraction of a second.
I'm surprised you didn't get stuck to the pump.
Well, nothing's wet, right? You know, it's so cold that you know, anything would be ice almost instantly. But that would be a concern. And with Alex's story, the other experience I've had, that we actually helped people on our road with their Bobcat. They were doing some plowing, and same situation. It wouldn't start, wouldn't turn over. It had an engine block heater, so they plugged it into a little portable generator, but they also had to basically put a little propane stove, like a little camp stove, underneath it, and, you know, sort of cover it with coats and that sort of, you know, ad hoc stuff to try to warm things up, because, you know, the battery doesn't work well when it's cold. The oil gets very thick when it's cold, and if you decide to start twiddling things, suddenly you discover that maybe the wires are brittle. We've also had the experience of making a fire and burning down to coals, and then putting the coals under the oil pan, which really is perilous, because you got to worry about, you know, fires, you got to worry about melting things that shouldn't be melted.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, if that's the only way you can warm it up, then otherwise you're stuck in 40 degree below, then that's what you do. So it can be very, very interesting. Luckily, though, I mean, it's a civilized place. We plug in our vehicles, we have electricity, and we dress for the weather, which you would hope, but of course don't always have the luxury of things like electricity.
Are you on the grid, Greg, or do you generate your own electricity?
Oh, this is a whole different story. And in fact, this is actually a good topic, you know, for one of these Hope Talks, potentially. So we are in an off-grid house, and the off-grid house includes a solar panel, so there's batteries. It also includes a generator, a diesel generator. And we have a wood-burning stove inside. We also have a wood-burning hydronic furnace outside, which is one of these boilers that circulates glycol for underfloor heating. So we are very much off-grid. It wasn't our goal, but we found a house that was perfect. But it's a little far out of town, and it's off-grid. So off-grid turns out to be a true hacker experience. I've done things which Kyle would appreciate. I've diagnosed heating systems, diagnosed control systems for heating, for hydronics. I had to replace thermostats, a variety of things. We had a situation where a pressure valve went because the diesel generator went out, because a wire on the starter motor became loose, and so the generator didn't start. The power went out. The glycol overheated. The pressure blew on the hydronic furnace, and we had like glycol all over the place.
It's the
from the furnace.
Those cascading failures that then lead to big problems. A story as old as time with engineering.
Complex systems.
You gotta
systems, right?
Yeah.
And people engineer complex systems, and they know what they're doing, but they don't necessarily, they're not able necessarily to engineer for all the interactions.
Or engineer
these complex systems.
Exactly, to be maintained. You know, the real life circumstances, an engineer that designed it is not the person that is going to be faced with repairs and upkeep.
Yeah, and so the hacker mindset was crucial to diagnosing this stuff. And I'm not a plumber, I'm not an electrician, I'm not even all that talented, I'm not so good with soldering, you know, and so forth. But on the other hand, when you're an hour away from town in Yukon Territory, and there's snow on the road, and you can't get anyone to come out because your generator just you know, puked, or your solar system isn't working properly, or who knows what. Then, enter hacker mindset and, of course, enter the internet also. That's been great, you know, reading manuals and, looking for, help in different online forums and that sort of thing. But it's very much a do-it-yourself environment in the Yukon.
Knowing when to ask for help or when you're out of your element is also good. Not trying to take on too much, but such an adventure. I would love to hear more about that. And I can't even begin to list how many skills and interesting areas of engineering or physics that I've explored because something broke and I was facing, yeah, you know, having to fix it, or how could I fix it, or what's the most economical way, or what should I do with what pieces are left of something. And it's always a puzzle, and I love it, but it can be aggravating as well. But when you throw survival in there, oh my gosh, anyway, we'll have to talk more about this. It's so fascinating. Such great stories too.
What's your connectivity like? You mentioned that.
Oh, this is, so in a nutshell, we're waiting for Elon Musk to save us with Starlink. So the connected, so we're off grid. So that means we have no landline connection. We don't have a land telephone line. We don't have land DSL, anything like that. Unfortunately, it's about 5 miles, 3 to 5 miles, depending on the route it would take to get to our house. And to put in an interconnect there would be substantial hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that's not happening until someone puts in a subdivision or something like that. So we have something called ExploreNet, which is basically the same as Hughes satellite. It's a geosynchronous satellite, so that is not too terrible, but it tends to be very congested in the afternoon, and also your latency is never going to be good because of the speed of light, right? So your geosynchronous satellite connection with ExploreNet. The other thing that we have is mobile internet, and we have a booster, which was also another interesting journey. So we have a commercial cellular booster that we put up, because we cannot quite see the antenna. We don't quite have line of sight to the nearest tower, but we almost have line of sight. And so with the booster, we're able to get from about, can't remember what the numbers are, but we're able to get to a reasonable number of decibels of boosted power. Mobile is very expensive. Mobile data is even more expensive in Canada than it is in the U.S., and also tends to suffer from congestion. And in Yukon, there's only one carrier. Rogers is the carrier of the physical lines, the fiber, you know, that connects us to the rest of Canada, even though you can have different companies. You can bring like your AT&T phone or whatever, and you get connectivity. But there's only one actual carrier with no physical route diversity. And so we have had cable cut incident, but you also run into capacity limits. So basically, it's satellite or terrestrial mobile are my two options. But we are waiting. I'm signed up, and Starlink says they're going to install sometime in 2022. And that is, I can tell you, that's been a game changer for people in rural Canada and other parts of rural North America, because suddenly you're not only reasonably priced, but at a very reasonable latency and actually quite good bandwidth, often better than DSL. So I just can't wait for Starlink to arrive.
But you'll still have to worry about the speed of light, right?
Well, the speed of light is certainly a factor, but it's much less of a factor because your geosynchronous satellites are on the order of 23,000 miles, right? But your low Earth orbit satellites, which includes Starlink, are under 200 miles. Right, so your latency to get from ground station to orbit is actually much, much less. Fraction. And then you're looking more at the latency of routing latency. So it's the way Starlink works is it goes from typically goes from one satellite to another satellite to another satellite before it gets to a ground station. And of course, each one of those routing hops, as everyone recalls from reading Cliff Stoll, The Cuckoo's Egg, mm-hmm. each one of those routing hops adds its own delay. So you're probably still looking at maybe 100 milliseconds latency, but just a geosynchronous orbit tends to be closer to 400 milliseconds latency. So it should be quite a bit better. And by all reports, it's actually not only decent, but it's even good enough for gaming, you know, for people that are into gaming.
Wow. Any final questions for Greg? He has to go feed those dogs. Okay, well, good. Greg, fascinating talking to you as always, and I look forward to the CFP for Hope being released tomorrow and all the fun of another Hope conference ahead of us. It's going to be amazing.
It's so energizing to be at this phase. You know, we a lot of us have done this before, but if you've been part of it or you want to be part of it or you've been reading about it in the magazine or on the radio show, just go for it. You know, get involved, get a ticket, sign up to be a volunteer, send in a speaker proposal. We love new topics. the barrier to entry is not that high for any of this. You know, we want to choose the best topics, but you can just show up and talk about things. You can show up and join a workshop, show up and become a volunteer. And that's how all of us got involved. You know, so I got involved showing up as a speaker and an AV volunteer. And, back in the year 2000. So anyone that has any interest should really just go for it. You know, make your plan. There's time to, you know, get time off from work, think about your vaccination status, think about your housing, think about your travel expense, and make a plan, you know, because it'll be fantastic to see you in July.
Absolutely. All right, Greg, get home safely and say hi to all the dogs. How many of them are there?
26 currently.
26 dogs. Okay, wow. That is incredible. That is incredible. And again, thanks for all you do and for inspiring us to do so much more. And we will talk to you in the future. All right. Be well.
All right. Hey, bye-bye.
So I'm told, Rob, our volume is low on YouTube. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, it's pretty low as these things go.
This happens every week.
Running in the background at full blast, and it's still nowhere near obscuring my ability to hear you guys. So,
all right. Well, Kyle is trying to work on it right now, yeah. But I think, you know, maybe YouTube could turn their volume up just for everybody. I think that might make things a little easier. Any better?
We'll have to wait for the delay.
Oh, that's right. We have to wait for the delay. It takes time. Alex, yes.
Well, apropos of Greg's stories and his anecdotes about dogs, I want to read you guys a stanza. And and while we're reading for phone calls, 802-321-4225, by the way, I'd be curious to see if any of you know where this is from. And I think it's a beautiful stanza. I think it has to do with the inexorability of doing what's right, even though it frightens you.
Walt Whitman.
Of Greg and his dogs. This is the stanza I'll read.
I guess Walt Whitman, am I right?
No, you're not. No.
Damn it.
The wild dogs cry out in the night as they go longing for some solitary.
Something company. Funny, Gila? There's a serious poem here.
She knows what it is.
Oh, my God.
Alex, but I know what it is.
Was it Weird Al Yankovic or something?
All right, let me start over.
Yeah, please start over. And no more catcalls and heckling.
As he often does, he interrupts the narrative flow. Emmanuel, that is. Yeah. Yeah. The wild dogs cry out into the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right. As sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti, I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
All right, Gayla, clearly you have some knowledge of this, so why don't you tell us what this is?
I'd like to thank the bards of the great band Toto, because that is the second verse of their song Africa.
That's right. That is from Africa.
That song I keep hearing.
Beautiful song. Uh-huh. I just recently read the lyrics to it, and I was so impressed by them. I had no idea what the hell was going on in the song for the entirety of my life. And,
it's a gorgeous song.
Beautiful.
It's one of Kyle's favorites, I think.
Okay, true story. If we have a minute, do we have a call on hold?
We do have a call, but you know what? They called well before we gave out the phone number, so you know they should be on hold because we didn't ask them to call. So, but stay on hold. We'll get to you. We'll get to you.
A quick story to explain why I was able to recognize those lyrics right off. Embarrassing but true, I was in the a cappella group when I was in college, and we tried to do Africa, and the second verse was my solo, and I could not get down the timing of the phrase, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I had to practice that every day for 2 weeks, and we never actually did the song.
Well, wow. And here it comes back, full circle. You never know what's going to become relevant later on.
So true. Everything is copy, I suppose.
You know, from my teen years until now, I have never been able to take Toto seriously. I'm sorry. I've tried. I have. But what are you going
to
do?
It's a beautiful song. I think it's a beautiful song. The lyrics are great. The melody, the beat, everything about it, it just comes together.
Well, okay. You know, tastes differ. That's for sure. Shall we take this phone call that's been on hold for a good long time? All right. Let's bring this up. And good evening. You're on overtime.
Good evening. And yes, your sound has been low. I'm hearing you much better over the phone than I was over the computer, which I muted when I got on.
Yeah, you're the only one on the phone, so I'm curious how people on the computer are hearing us, if they're hearing us. Rob, is it better? Rob, are you there?
It's kind of where it was. It kind of hasn't changed.
Well, I don't know how much more we can turn it up. We can talk louder. You know, we can turn these. Kyle, what do you think? What is causing this? Is it that that program we use to send to YouTube, or is it just a problem with YouTube?
Well, I mean, is this really what we're talking about now?
Right now, if people can't hear us, we should probably figure out what's going on.
Okay.
Because it seems to happen every week. It does seem to be an issue. It's not an issue on the radio. I don't know why it's not an issue on the radio, but on YouTube. That tells me it's something with YouTube.
I'm hearing some feedback that the volume is perfect.
So. Oh, really? Okay. Well, see. There's different opinions.
I raised it a little bit in the streaming software that we use to get to YouTube, so...
Yeah, Rob, maybe you're the problem.
But as I said at the beginning, like, you know, this is a new location, and we're going to tweak some of this, so just please bear with us.
Yeah,
hopefully
bear with
we
us.
Are legible. Really, the information is what's important. We don't care if we sound terrible. No, we...
We care if we sound
let's
terrible.
Let's not say it that way. we appreciate the feedback, and we'll do better.
The feedback of voices, not the feedback of speakers screeching, because we get that, too, sometimes.
You know, maybe I mean both.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Hey, we have a caller. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hi.
Oh, we did this already. We already did this, yes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yes, I wanted to let you know that even though I was switched to Fios, I am now fighting to try to be switched back to copper.
Nobody has ever done that. Nobody in history has ever been able to do that.
Well, I may not succeed, or maybe I'll make history.
That is kind
but
of...
But anyway, to,
that is
today,
sort of poetic, using their new technology to do all the web research and make all the phone calls you have to make, to force them to get to make you to allow you back onto the older network. I like that, and they have to respect that. They may not like it, but
you know what I realized?
The people who come to switch me are people who have been working for the company for 20 years, and they all know how the copper works. They're just not allowed to use their knowledge. So when the company keeps telling me that the people who even know how to fix copper are far and few between, that has not been what I have found out when people have come to my house. And somebody came to my house today to install the emergency box so that, you know, that there's maybe going to be a blizzard on Friday. And so if
it's a bomb cyclone, bomb cyclone.
If there should be an electricity outage, I now have that emergency box, which will keep me going for, I don't know, maybe almost 24 hours if I don't actually use the phone. And this one, they used to have them with these special batteries, but now they're giving out ones that use 12D batteries. And so it's considered my responsibility to get extra batteries if I want to be safe for longer than that period of time, or if I want to actually be able to use the phone.
Oh, that is so stupid.
Well, no, actually, I think that's better because that gives you the power at least to get your backup system working again if you have D cell batteries, 12 of them, my God.
Well, apparently the ones with the special batteries, it was possible to order extras, but they were very expensive. But I'm sure getting loads of D batteries is also expensive. I did do some research, and I found out that Rayovac lasts longest, and they're also much cheaper than the other the ones that advertise that they last longest.
And we all know who that is. It's interesting. It seems to be the road everyone's going down. But I realized something. Out on Long Island, a lot of people complain that fiber is not available. And I realize if you're one of those people who complains that fiber isn't available, you're one of those people that can hold on to your copper line indefinitely. So I guess that's kind of a good thing.
Yes.
Right? All right.
Lucky them. They don't know.
Well, we do have the bomb cyclone coming this weekend, so I guess this will be the first test to see how it goes. The last storm of significance, we had no power for 2 weeks, so we'll see how it goes.
But they also say that if it veers a little to the left or to the right, it'll make a big difference as to how much snow we get. So we might not have a horrible snowstorm.
Yeah, there's the American forecast, and then there's the European forecast. I don't know why the Europeans care. And I don't know why they always are different, but that's what you see on the weather channels. Is that
they use different prediction. There's a whole bunch of different ways you can predict the weather, and they give different results.
Yeah, every time they get different results. Apparently, it's just you'd think you'd know which one works better by now.
Maybe they all work about equally.
Well, we'll see.
And they're all unreliable.
The important thing, and I say this to everybody, the important thing is that if you watch the Weather Channel, they will try to name this storm that's coming. Don't accept that. Winter storms do not get named by the Weather Channel. Hurricanes get named by the people that name hurricanes, because that's what they do. But TV networks don't get to name storms in the winter. So I refuse to accept whatever they decide to call this one. Sorry, I guess.
Well, if they name it anyway, what are you going to do?
I'm not gonna recognize it. If somebody says, "Hey, did you see Tom barrel through here before?" I'm gonna say, "Who's that?" I have no idea what you're talking about, even if I know what they're talking about. It's a blizzard. It's a if you want to call it a bomb cyclone, go ahead and call it that, but don't name winter storms. You don't have the right. You're a weather channel. Report the damn weather. I'm sorry. This upsets me.
Okay.
Thank you for your call and good luck with the storm and with the new fiber optics and we'll talk to you next 2 weeks, actually.
Yes.
All right.
You know, you're listed on the WBAI programming chart as being on next week.
Yeah, well, there was some confusion about that, but I am assured that we are not on next week. That's what they have told us.
Well, the people consulting the chart will be fooled.
Yeah, they certainly will. It wouldn't be the first time either. Anyway, thanks.
Yeah, they're just so sloppy.
Well, we can get into that, but let's not. Thanks again for your call. We will talk to you again. And we're going to open up the phone line to 802-321-4225. That is our phone number. Yes, Rob.
Yeah, I agree with you totally on the Weather Channel deciding they have the right to name storms thing. That has annoyed me so much.
How dare they?
Doing it.
Who are they to do
you
this?
You don't see that in other kinds of journalism, only weather. It's like they don't decide that, like, somebody who holds up a store on 5th and Main, like, they don't decide, oh, their name is John Smith, and we're going to call them that. You do not get to dictate that.
You don't know the storm. You don't have any idea anything about this storm. You do not know its name. Mm-mm. So this, you don't have the right. You don't have the right. You know, Fox News could name this storm something completely different. Who's to say who's right and who's wrong? You know, hurricanes, they're named by the Weather Authority. When the Weather Authority people take an interest in naming winter storms, I'll listen. Not until then. All right, we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
I hope it doesn't snow Friday morning, because I'm going to Kansas Friday morning, so I hope it just snows after Friday, and I hope doesn't snow in Chicago, because I'm changing planes in Chicago.
Rebel, you are constantly traveling. What's going on? Are you making up for lost time?
I will. I'm back from California, but I forgot to call last week.
Uh-huh. Well, we forgot to pick up, so it's okay. Last we heard from you, you were driving a Tesla near Disneyland.
Right.
And every bit is exciting as
well. I will never drive a Tesla again. I mean, they're nice cars, and you know, but it's just too annoying. I mean, like, you have to, it's like almost, you have to have a college degree to learn how to drive a car now. It's really, you know, I didn't know how to use the auto driver feature. I wanted to play with that, but I didn't know how to use it. I didn't even know how to use the cruise control, because everything is on a tablet, and I didn't want to, it was somebody else's car, and I didn't want to mess with their settings and, you know, do anything, you know. So
it's different when it's like a rental agency. You feel like it's not personal,
right? Because they know how to set it up again. You know, they know how to redo the settings when it's a rental. And they could help you, and you know. But anyway.
But you went.
But I like the Nissan Leaf. And
you went to a guy's house and you took his car, and then you're bringing it back to him, and you don't want to mess it up,
right? Yeah, I mean, that's, you know. But what I'm talking about Friday is I'm going on a farm tour, and that is going to be staying on somebody's farm.
A farm tour? Okay, you got to describe what that is. A farm tour.
I don't know. There's just something on YouTube that I found, and I just always wanted to know how things work, how food is made, and how, you know, it's grown and stuff. And, you know, because I see these farms, I see these, you know, how you see these farms and these things in the country and these grain farms or whatever, and you hear about the grain elevators and whatnot, you know, and.
Well, don't get too close to those.
Yeah.
Stay away from those. Those are really dangerous.
And some of them are missile silos, so be careful of those.
Yeah.
No, that's the one in the ground. But, yeah, so I'm going on farm tour for the weekend, and, you know.
Okay, well, are you going to be involved in slaughtering anything?
No, I'll see the cows and everything, but I won't, you know.
Okay.
You know.
It might be a little cold there, you know.
Yeah, what are you looking forward to?
Well, actually, it's going to be 50 degrees there. I checked the weather.
All right. Yes, Kyle, go ahead.
What are you looking forward to specifically there? Yeah, what's on your mind, too?
About California. You know, I did my usual thing. I go there every year. I know somebody in California, in San Diego. And, you know, I must say, you know, going through California, I will not go into Mexico again. I mean, I never been into Mexico.
What happened, Rebel? What happened when you went into Mexico?
No, nothing happened. No, I'm just saying, Mexico, you know, just because of what's been going on. And, you know,
what's been going on?
10 years ago with the left. No, I mean, 10 years ago was the last time I went to Mexico, and I will never go. But, you know, recently with the caravan thing with a couple of years ago, and, you know, going to the Mexico, you go to a place called Calexico, it's like California and Mexico.
Right.
It's a border town. You know, there are these, you know, National Guard troops, you know, stationed there, and, you know, it's Operation Border Shield on their, like, both of us. And, you know, I asked them, you know, anyway, it's a National Guard in every state in the South. They say, yeah, we're helping the Border Patrol.
Oh, for God's sake. You know, every time I've been to Mexico, it's been an awesome experience. And just because of what you hear about roving gangs of immigrants approaching our border, you don't have to panic.
You don't have
to worry about it.
Well, no, it's when you go on the main highway, Interstate 8, you know, they have these checkpoints. When the highway gets too close to the border, they have these checkpoints where you drive, it's like a toll booth,
mm-hmm.
A border patrol person says, hey, usually they'll say, are you a U.S. citizen? And you'll say yes, and they'll, you know, if you don't look Mexican, then they'll say thank you. This one just, you know, this person just waved me through it, didn't ask me any question, you know, and of course there's this building there that says, you know, additional checkpoint, whatever, additional search or whatever. Of course there's two National Guard soldiers there, just, you know, standing there, but this person just waved me through, you know, I just, you know, drove up to the thing, and, you know, no question of, you know, I just waved me through, and, you know,
Sounds like you're upset you didn't get stopped and ask questions in your own country about
No, I'm just surprised, you know, I you know, because usually they'll ask you if you're, you know, are you a citizen, and they won't ask you for any proof, like a driver's license or anything. It's not like going through the border checkpoint where the show ID.
Yeah, because you're not going through a border, yet you get stopped in your own country and asked if you're a citizen. That just doesn't seem right.
Right. Well, I mean, you have to have this, you know, this special, like, every state now has to have a enhanced ID so that when you go through borders and airports, you know, it's easier for them to check and cross-reference, so.
I heard Washington still doesn't have an enhanced ID. Is that true, Kyle?
All right, you know.
I think no, it's in October. There,
hats off if they don't, because
they're still working on it.
Still working on it. Okay, all right.
I think they got an extension, actually.
Wow. Anything else, Rebel?
Nothing. I guess just, you know, I was at the store at I was in Texas one day, and you know, at a store near the border, and you know, Brownsville, Texas, one time, you know, and of course, you know, I see this, you know, National Guard part, you know, this Operation Border Shield people, you know, there too, and this is like a year or two ago.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. Anyone out there have questions for Rebel? No?
Will you be taking precautions when you go visit those farms that there are no mix-ups and they don't...
No, I mean, I'm not going to be able to buy. I mean, what kind
of... You guys can't be talking at the same time. You don't hear each other. So let Rob finish his question.
I'm Just wishing you the best for your trip, Rebel, and, you know, have fun in the chicken coops and whatnot.
Okay, well, I'll be staying at a farm. It says a farm barn loft. I don't know what that means, but it's a basement in somebody's house. So.
Oh, boy.
I've never done that before. It's, I mean, I've seen pictures of it. It looks, you know, pretty nice.
Tell somebody where you're going, okay, just so that we can check in. And
well, you know, and
I don't know
I think
what farm in Kansas
know.
You're going to be in. There's a million of them. Come on.
It's a line near McPherson. No, it's in... It's in Astoria, Kansas, or Astoria, Kansas.
You're going to a farm in Astoria? Really? You a Queens native? Mm-hmm. Amazing. Wow. Okay, well, when you find the one in Flushing, let me know. It's it sounds like an awesome trip.
That's something good to have in common, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. Astoria to Astoria.
Sister cities.
Well, safe travels, Rebel, and please call us in 2 weeks.
Yeah. In 2 weeks?
Yes.
Oh, because you're not going to be on. Let's see. Wednesday I'll be in... okay, yeah. Well,
it's,
okay,
I understand the 9th of February.
Rebels World Tour.
Right.
All right. Safe travels.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
I don't know what that demonic laugh is all about. farmers in Kansas, you've been warned. Go to whatever protocol you go to in these situations. 802-321-4225. Boy, our universe is interesting. from Greg to Rebel, all sorts of fascinating adventures going on. All right, let's see who's out there now. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello, it's Philip from Missouri. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You sound a little different this week.
Yeah, well, I just got back from the doctor.
And how
are
things?
I'm all dilated. My eyes are all dilated, so I'm seeing, like, all kinds of weird stuff.
Uh-huh. Enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, I haven't forgot about Alex. I'm just, you know, I just don't have a lot going on right now. If I got anything going on, I'll be sure to email him.
Have you heard? Glad you mentioned it. Very good, and glad you called.
Yeah, I think Alex has something to help you. If you just email him, he'll email you back with the details.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
you can email oph@2600.com, and I'll respond to that.
Yes.
I'll just put Alex in, like, the subject line or something like that, so you know it's me.
He's very good at responding.
But yeah. Just, I guess I should just give myself a handle, right? Mr. Chicago or Phil DePeel. I like Phil DePeel because I put him to sleep, right?
we'll figure it out. We will.
Okay, well, anyway, did you hear today where Cardi B won a lawsuit against a YouTuber for spreading lies about her?
No, I did not.
A libel lawsuit. Apparently, the YouTuber's going around saying that she was a prostitute and all this other stuff.
And now you said
Cardi
it.
B.
Now you said it. Cardi B's going to be coming after you now.
Oh, allegedly. I'm sorry. I'm just relating the story. So if the FBI's listening or anything like that, yeah. I'm just relating the story I saw. Apparently, she won a libel suit against them. So I guess these YouTubers, especially these rumor channels, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they need to, you know, start taking what they send out there more seriously, or else they're going to be out of some money.
Well, do you think that's a good thing?
Well, in a way, yes. In a way, no. You know, like the whole QAnon thing, talking about this, that, and the other, like eating children to live forever and all that junk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's liable. I mean, that's really liable. I don't understand why these people don't take these guys up on this and just sue them to oblivion, because, you know, that's kind of crazy.
Well, I think what you just said now, it's kind of crazy, so people say, wow, this is insane, no one's going to believe it. But then they realize, oh, my God, people are believing it. And,
yes, they are.
And you have to redefine the boundaries.
Those people who were in Dallas are still there. Found that out the other night through, I think it was Seth Meyer. He was talking about the other night. Where they're still there. There's not as many, but they're still there in those hotels just waiting for JFK Jr. to come around.
Oh, those people. The JFK Jr. is coming back to life people.
Yeah, they're still there. And they still believe all this junk, and they keep you know, saying the same old stuff. So, you know, I'm surprised that Fox News doesn't have more libel on them. especially with the Bob Saget thing where he tried to start a rumor that was based on COVID and his family's hiding it from everybody and all this other stuff.
Uh-huh.
I'm surprised they didn't get knocked down for that.
There's only so much time in a day, I guess. There's so many crazy conspiracy theories out there now.
Yeah, for real. I mean, Tucker Carlson last night was going, why is everybody picking on Russia? Russia's so great. Well, it turns out that Russia's got this super secret cool ship they built, right? And they said it was like for oceanographic research or something like that. But apparently, this bad boy's been using sonar to like cut lines off. Like in Norway, you know the SOSA system? The underwater microphones, all that to track submarines and stuff like that. Well, apparently have the communication lines too. So apparently somebody's been going around cutting those communication lines to Norway, the underwater ones.
Oh, wow.
And they've been doing it, and they started doing it in Ireland too. Some of the lines been cut off.
Wasn't Ireland the country that just told Russia they weren't welcome to do war games off their coast?
Exactly. A bunch of fishermen going to go out there, and I hope they don't get killed.
Wow.
Because Russia don't play around, man.
You wouldn't think it would be Ireland that stood up to Russia. I mean, they're not even near each other, so I'm not sure how that even works. But,
my thing is, I don't want nukes flying. That's my thing.
You don't want nukes flying. Okay.
Yeah.
Chalk one up for the anti-nuclear war camp.
I mean, I don't know why Fox News decided to be Putin's best friend in the last few years, but good grief, man. Tucker Carlson last night,
I don't watch Tucker Carlson, but I do know that we had a president for 4 years who was very cozy with Putin, and now you have a president who's standing up to Putin who is not part of the Fox party. So do the math. That's why they're allying themselves literally with a foreign nation over their own.
Yeah, I mean, it's just totally nuts, and I don't understand how you can call yourself patriots and then the next thing, hey, you know what?
They are patriots, just not patriots to us, to democracy,
There's real patriotism, and there's like this phony patriotism you do for Facebook. Like 1 year during the Super Bowl, some dude decided to send to a local TV station his kids standing up for the Pledge of Allegiance while they're watching the Super Bowl at home.
Uh-huh.
Stuff like that. And he got all kinds of shares and likes on it. And I was like, man, that's just made up, man. Nobody does that. Nobody cares to do that. And it's just, he's just doing it to get the likes and shares out, and I got blasted on there for it. But you know what? I'm calling it like it is. It's like, you cannot coerce somebody to be patriotic. That's the thing. It's in the Constitution, no coercion.
Mm-hmm.
It's freedom of speech. You don't have to stand up for a pledge. You don't have to do anything. It's just, the founding fathers didn't come up with a pledge, and they didn't come up with a national anthem either.
That's
true. As a matter of fact, if I remember my history from high school, they didn't like that kind of stuff. Because it's beholden to too many kings and queens, you know?
They could come up with a much better tune, I think. Alexander Hamilton alone, from what I hear, was a very good songwriter.
I'm hoping against hope that's what the renamed the football team in Washington do.
What is with
Washington
that?
Hamilton.
No, seriously, why are they taking so long to rename that team? Washington football team. It's like they're making a statement like, look, you forced us to call ourselves nothing. You know, it's so silly at this point. They should just name it something and be done with it.
Well, the Cleveland Indians, they did it overnight, right?
Yeah, the Guardians, like, so that they could keep the last few letters. And the same number of syllables, same pronunciation, so, you know, it was fairly easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's still like Native Americans want to, because the Guardians on the bridge are like Natives or something like that, right? So I think it's just a ploy.
Here's my suggestion, and this is literally thinking about it for 10 seconds. Washington, call your team the Red Hawks, all right? That way you keep the red, sounds sort of similar, it's got a bird in it, you know, and we can all go home and live our lives. Washington Red Hawks, I know who they are, so do that, and let's stop with this football team nonsense.
Well, I think Hamilton's would be the greatest because it fits, because Hamilton and Washington were buds at one time, right?
True.
And he kind of, especially if you played Hamilton, the opening song to Hamilton, it's like a fight song that's coming out.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it'd be great. It fits.
Do you know there's a city named Hamilton in Canada, and they have a football team. Do you know what that football team is called?
Rough Riders, isn't it?
No, that's Saskatchewan. But very, points for knowing that. No, they're the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Yeah.
Oh.
Or at least they were last time I checked. They might have gone out of business. Who knows? But yeah, that's a little fact for you here.
Well, something else too. I think the DOJ should just go ahead and pull the trigger on this whole "we need a criminal investigation" thing going on, because when they're like unsigned executive orders saying we're going to take the military and take all the voting machines. And we got all these faked electorates, and it seems like every time I turn on YouTube, there's a new video about more electorates, more fraudulent electorates.
Who
went through the trouble of forging the papers, but didn't bother to make it to the way the states do it. So it's all like Xerox files.
There's no good way to play that. It just isn't. And I can hardly wait to see what the investigation finds.
Well, They found out that Giuliani was head of all that.
Of course
so
he was.
It figures. I mean, he ended up around a porn shop thinking it's Four Seasons Hotel.
I can hardly wait for Giuliani the musical on Broadway. That is going to be something.
We need it.
Yeah.
We need it. Oh, you mentioned Hamilton before. I found out something very interesting. You remember when Pelosi did that little did that song? The guy who wrote Hamilton, write those lyrics for, like, the January 6th stuff.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah.
Check this out now. I found this out. Pelosi has stock in Disney.
I'm sure she has stock in everything. She's not poor.
Yeah, but Disney owns the right to Hamilton, so it's not that big of a leap to think that.
I didn't know that. Disney owns the right to Hamilton.
Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of depressing.
Yeah, they own the rights to Hamilton. You can go on Disney Plus right now and watch it. They took out the whole two or three F words in it. But
oh, really? You know, the Beatles documentary, Peter Jackson was able to get them to keep the swear words in because Disney usually doesn't allow swear words.
Yeah,
what kind of world is this where a premium service will censor out certain words? It's just it's silly. But fortunately,
speaking of Disney, Abigail Disney, who's like one of the kids or grandkids.
Abigail Disney, wow.
She did a documentary. That's a real person. She did a documentary on Disney, Disneyland, and the employees there. And how badly they've been treated and all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
So she put a scene on MSNBC, and it's like they're sitting around in some room, and she's like, how many people had to sleep in their car since they started working here? And they start raising their hand and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of got a point, you know. Disney's making a lot of money off Marvel and everything, and it's not trickling down to their employees at all. And I mean, you got people who are paying $6,000 a night for a cruise, a Star Wars cruise, where you just, like, hang out in a room, and it's not really even a cruise. They make pretend that that you're in a spaceship in a hotel room for $6,000 a night.
Oh, God. That's
criminal.
And
you make pretend that you're on a bridge of said spaceship shooting down TIE fighters. So, you know, you got, like, these 40, 50-year-old guys like me hanging out, waiting in line to be able to go bing, bling, bling, or pew, pew, like they're little kids and stuff like that.
Because they are. They are little kids with a lot of money.
Yeah. It's like the Galaxy's Edge. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing the life-size Millennium Falcon and all that, but they want $200 a ticket to go in there.
Uh-huh.
Plus they want an extra $200 to be able to build your own lightsaber. And it's like there's no kids there. I went on the YouTube channels where they go do these rides and everything. No kids at all with these things because it's not made for kids. It's made for a bunch of rich nerds who have nothing better to do with their money.
And kids are too smart for this kind of
crap. Girlfriends with it.
Wow. All right. Listen, you're giving us a lot to talk about, and we're going to try to get one more call in. But best of luck with everything. No, nothing to apologize for. Yeah. You definitely give us a lot to mull over.
I guess that's about it. I mean, just watch what you say on YouTube. I guess we get sued.
Wow. Yes. We have to be careful. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Hang in there.
Yeah. Have a good one.
Take care. Again, our phone number, 802-321-4225. You guys have anything? You're just eating and drinking over there in Skype land. What's
Well, you know, not to plug our unaffiliated nonprofit organizations, but we got a shipment of cookies from someone we know who has a girl who's in a scouting program and sells cookies as part of it. So we're pretty happy right now.
You have Girl Scout cookies.
We have Girl Scout cookies.
I mean, it's pretty damn obvious. Okay. Well, some people get all the perks. And, Alex, you're continuing to pour yourself some refreshments there, I see.
Yes, in fact, I'm having a Baltic-style porter here. It's brewed with cacao nibs and salt. So it's quite tasty, I have to say.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's nothing compared to, you know, a Bulgarian delicacy or anything like that. But to bring things back to the issue of that libel suit, look, I think it's a good reminder that sometimes you have to be cautious of spreading lies about people. You know, whether you do it online or not, you know, you're not immune. You know, it is absolutely wrong to libel somebody, to defame somebody online or in print or in person. And whether you're a celebrity or an individual, you know, that's legally actionable, right? You can bring a claim against somebody who spreads lies about you, and I think that it's an important right that we all have.
Well, then it comes down to what is a lie. Like, if I say Donald Trump is a fascist, is that a lie? I don't think it's a lie at all. I think it's provable. But someone like that might go and contest it.
Well, one way to get around these defamation libel laws is to begin every sentence where you are criticizing somebody like that with "I believe that" or "I think that," because you can never be sued for an opinion. If you present something as a fact, right? If you say, "I saw Donald Trump at a meeting in the basement of my local my local Wallbounds grocery store."
Let me correct you, Alex. You believe you saw him. You believe you saw him there. Could have been a clone.
I believe I saw him. Sure.
It gets silly really quickly.
It does silly very quickly, but there's a difference between believing something or having an opinion about something. But even then, I think you could be crossing a line if you believe something that was supposedly a fact. But in any event, look, people have to be careful about what they say. It's not you don't have this absolute right to say anything you want online. And I think it's a good right. I think it's unfortunate, though, that it can be very costly to enforce that right, and that's why most of these defamation and libel cases are brought by people with means, but people with lesser means can protect themselves by exercising those very same rights.
Let me just say, Donald Trump is a fascist, Donald Trump Jr. is a fascist, Eric Trump is a fascist, Ivanka Trump is a fascist. I don't know about Tiffany yet, but the jury's out on that, and I'm not prefacing that with any conditional statement. Go ahead,
okay.
Gila. Yeah, I've gotten us in trouble.
I think it's interesting is these suits, and the argument keeps getting made that, excuse me, nobody can expect serious, nobody can expect that you're taking these people seriously. Like, wasn't that Alex Jones's defense in one of his suits, that nobody can expect that nobody should be taking Alex Jones seriously? And I think they're saying some of the same things about Fox News, is that this is obviously entertainment, so therefore the libel statute doesn't apply. Right.
So, Rogan's the same way. He's like, "Oh, I'm an idiot. Don't listen to me," as he like cashes checks for millions of subscribers on Spotify.
Exactly.
You know,
and
it's like, "Oh no, I have no."
I'm bummed about Neil Young.
Mm. What do you mean you're bummed about? No, what happened?
Neil Young told Spotify that if they were going to continue to platform Joe Rogan, they had to pull all his music.
I heard that. I thought that was great.
No, it is great. I'm sad that Spotify refused to deplatform Joe Rogan and has pulled all of Neil Young's music.
Yeah, okay, well, that's their decision then, and I don't use Spotify. That's one of the reasons. We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello, it's Labrador calling again.
Oh, wow, Labrador. How's the weather in Labrador?
Oh, it is minus 29. It's a lot warmer. It's a lot colder here than Mr. Newby in the Yukon there, that's for sure.
Yeah, you have his weather.
We do, but I guess we get where he's getting the Pacific Pacific heat, I guess it's a lot warmer. I guess they get that little bit of blast of warmth, I guess, once in a while.
Do you have a lot of...
Here in Labrador, we're getting that Atlantic cold.
Do you have a lot of dog teams there, dog sledding?
We do, but I don't think it's as much as it is in the Yukon. It's we do. My missus' sister had a team for a while there, but unfortunately, she had to get rid of it. But some people do have it, but it's not as prevalent as the Yukon, I don't think.
Wow, that's amazing. We still want to stop by sometime on our travels through Labrador when all the craziness is over, and hopefully when it's cold too, because I understand that's when it's at its best.
Yeah, it's a nice country. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Did you have something you wanted to bring up?
I just want to say hi, really. I don't want to keep you guys too long. It was just nice to hear from the Yukon there. I figured I'd jump in and give a call.
Yeah, from both sides of Canada. It's pretty awesome. And sides that people don't check out nearly enough. Can you tell us something about Labrador that might pique the average person's interest? Because we're already interested.
Oh, man, it's just wide open space. They call it the Big Land. That's what they call Labrador. It's called the Big Land. It's just wide open space. It's a beautiful country. If you're an outdoors person, you like fishing, nature, it's got it all, really. You're in the middle of nowhere, really.
Mm-hmm. And what are the people like?
Oh, they're wonderful. Friendly people. I don't think you can find any more friendlier than the people from Newfoundland, Labrador, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's interesting too because the province I believe is called Newfoundland and Labrador, so it's two different parts. Newfoundland being the island, I guess, and Labrador being the mainland.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, wow. Yeah, we're all the same province basically, but it's a beautiful province. The people are really friendly. There's a lot of culture here, like I think I said on a previous program. I'm Inuit. We have a lot of a native indigenous population here in Labrador. In Newfoundland, now you've got the Newfoundlanders, which is basically, I guess, mostly European descent.
So maybe,
yeah, it's a
maybe you
great
can help,
place.
Maybe you can help clear up some confusion that I've had. I think we told you we took the train from Sept Îles to Schefferville, passing through Labrador.
Yep.
And we met a lot of kids on that train. Who I'm not sure if they were Inuit or is Inuk and Inuit is that similar? Are they totally different?
That would be the same. Inuk and Inuit would be considered the same. You do have the Innu population here though.
Oh boy,
that would be in Quebec and also in Labrador. They would be the actual considered the First Nations. Aboriginal people.
So Innu,
as far as I know.
Innu, Inuk, and Inuit.
Inuk is kind of the same. It's kind of like what we call ourselves, I guess, like an Inuk person, but we're actually Inuit.
Okay.
But then there's the other Aboriginal group, which was the Innu, which would be that more of a First Nations group, and they're like in Quebec. And they're also in Labrador as well.
Is the language similar?
No.
Oh, boy.
No, not at all.
Wow. Okay. You see my confusion.
As far as I know, like, there's different dialects of Inuit that kind of come across the north, actually. So it's not, there might be a bit of similarities, but I'm not sure. Unfortunately, I don't speak the language. It's kind of been lost, unfortunately, with myself. But along the coast of Labrador, it's still quite strong.
We brought this up before. They spoke Dene, French, and English.
Dene?
Dene.
Yeah.
What language is that?
Ooh. It's Dene.
I'm really not sure.
But, I mean, is that related? Is that related to Innu or?
I couldn't tell you. Really, I'm not.
Okay.
I really don't know. Like I said, the dialects are so different amongst the different populations, is what I've heard. So, I really don't know.
Right. Now, my understanding is that the Inuit people are generally treated better by the Canadian government than the Innu and others that are part of First Nations. Is that accurate?
I don't know about that. I mean, as far as being treated better, like I pay taxes. I guess apparently some groups don't. Like I really don't know if that's being treated better or not. Like basically, I can say what with our group of people, we've kind of had an agreement with the government, I guess, and we kind of govern ourselves in that kind of way. We got our own little thing on the go.
Like there seems to be more independence in the Inuit communities than in other areas of Canada. That's I know nothing about this.
I can see why you say that. I can see that. I can see why you say that. I guess, but maybe it has something to do with geographics. I really don't know. Like, I mean, the indigenous groups are spread so far across.
Right.
I mean, there's so many different groups of us too, right?
Well, such remote neighborhoods, up in Baffin Island, that whole region, Arctic Bay. It's just so far removed from mainstream Canada.
Yeah, it is, for sure. In the Kalawit right now, they're having a major water problem.
Yes.
So, I mean, like...
We have Canadian TV, so we watch
APTN.
News. Yeah, APTN, and we watch Northbeat on CBC.
Yeah, we've been keeping up with some of that.
Yep.
I don't know if you have any updates or can explain it for people who don't know about what's going on there.
On the Calabi, as far as I know, they've had an oil, like there's like a gasoline or oil or something going in the water, and they're having issues up there. I'm not totally sure what's going behind there either, but it's just an issue that really needs to be cleaned up. So, I mean,
some kind of contamination.
It's really unfortunate, but it's a small group of people, and they really rely, they need water. I mean, we all need water.
Right, absolutely.
And, it's definitely an issue. I don't know how it's going. Like as far as I know, like last I've seen something recently that it's still an issue. So, I mean, for a country of like Canada to have, I mean, the money that we've got, I mean, there's still a long way to go, for sure.
Absolutely,
in a lot of certain areas. I mean, with all people, really, not just Indigenous people, but I mean, I think everybody should have clean drinking water.
Yeah, especially a place like Iqaluit where, the people come from the outside and pollute everything and then you have to live with that, It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, really.
Can I ask,
so many things like...
being in Labrador, are you off the grid as well as Greg in the Yukon?
No, we've got power. Well, being Labrador, there's the Muskrat Falls and Churchill Falls hydroelectric dams that were constructed. So electricity is not really an issue here as far as that goes. Those are producers of it. And we're trying to, but that being said, if you're in a small, like if you're in a major town like I'm in, like Happy Valley, we're not off the grid. But now, I mean, I also have a cabin that's about maybe 40, 50 minutes away. That's off the grid. So, I'd like to get that cabin set up eventually for it with solar power and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually thinking about constructing a solar-powered heating system that's created by pop cans. I think you've probably seen that solar pop can solar.
No, I don't think we've seen that
constructed. So I'm going to probably construct one of those myself.
Wow.
In the near future for my cabin.
That's awesome. That sounds great.
Kind of a hacking kind of a thing to do with what you got. It's just pop cans, really, painted black.
So your cabin is basically you can get away from the big city of Happy Valley and just see nature a bit.
Well, I wouldn't really call it a city. It's more of it's a town, but, I mean, it's got power. We have a grid of power here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, power's not an issue. Internet's not an issue. But listening to Greg earlier about the Starlink, that's a great thing. Actually, I've seen the Starlink satellites just fly right over here within the last couple of weeks, actually. So that's something that's going to probably bring a lot of internet to places where it's a bit more remote, where people have cabins in the middle of nowhere, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's true. I'm a little upset that they're interfering with astronomer work. Supposedly they're blocking views, all these satellites that they've launched.
Yeah.
So they have to deal with that.
That's the first thing I thought of, too. I mean, I'm like, oh, and then you got all this beautiful northern lights up here in the north.
The northern lights. Like, yeah, you must see the northern lights every day.
Not every day, but we do see them. But, I mean, that's kind of going to be the sad thing of the future with, I guess, with progress brings a lot of downsides, and that's going to be unfortunate. You're going to be looking at this beautiful aurora borealis, and then there's all these satellites going to be zipping through it.
Well, we don't have to let that happen. We don't have to let it happen quite that way. We can improve and make it not as painful.
I've always had that. I've always kind of been weary about technology myself too. It's always got a little negative thing that comes along with it, don't it? It's not really. It helps in a lot of ways, and sometimes we don't really think about what we need to do, but we still produce all these technologies that kind of. We don't really see that far down in the future sometimes. I think kind of money gets in the way, jobs, oh, we need these jobs, we need this, we need that. And sometimes that stuff kind of gets in the way. We miss out on some of that beauty that we're going to ruin because of it.
There's always an alternative. There's always a different way to accomplish things. Guys in Skype land, did you have any questions for our Labrador friend?
No, but it's really good to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and you guys are sounding good through the YouTube up here. Right?
See, I told you. I told you YouTube wasn't the problem.
Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah.
No, I can hear you good when the volume's turned up. I just figured I'd let you know that, too.
Okay, yeah, we've been reconfigured, so we're going to try to work out a little bit of conditioning on the power and the audio, make it clean up a little bit. So thanks for that, and keep listening.
Yes.
Like, I hear you and I hear Emmanuel really fine, but the other guests, or the other, Gila and those guys, I don't hear them as well through the phone.
Yeah,
they
need to raise their voices a little bit. We've always said this. Yeah.
We need to project.
Yeah, they're really hard to hear when they're talking. Like, I could barely hear Rob just then, actually, when he was saying that.
What about now?
You guys sound great.
Well, thank you. Thanks. Always good to hear that. So we're going to go, but thanks so much for calling, and best to everybody in Labrador. We hope to see you there someday. We'll probably take a drive or something and try to get to... can we get to St. John's by going through Happy Valley?
Oh, well, that would be on the island.
Right. Well, we know
St.
that.
St. John's would be a new...
Well, that's the idea, is to go through Labrador and cut over to Newfoundland and come back through Nova Scotia.
Oh, sure. You can. Yep. All you got to do is take a ferry from St. Barb... the south coast of Labrador over to St. Barb, Newfoundland, the tip of Newfoundland there, and the northern peninsula of Newfoundland, I meant to say. And then you can just drive straight on down to St. John's. And then from there, you would have to probably to get back to home, to get back to the mainland. I think you'd have to take a ferry from Argentia or something in Newfoundland, and then you go from there.
Port of Basque, I believe,
Port of Basque as well. Yeah, that's right, too. There's two you can take. Depending on what side of the island you are,
We have to visit St. Pierre and Miquelon, which is part of France, so that's right off the coast of Newfoundland.
Yeah.
Wow, so many things. And is that year-round that we can take that boat?
I believe so.
Okay.
Going from Labrador to Newfoundland has issues sometimes because of the ice buildup certain times a year.
Okay.
You could get stranded trying to get across there. But now from Port of Basque to go to Halifax or wherever it goes, I can't remember exactly where it goes. I don't think there's many issues there, but that Labrador Strait, does get packed with ice at certain times of the year.
Okay, we'll just drive over then. We'll just drive over the ice. That's not a problem.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for calling, and keep doing what you're doing up there.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
Take care. All right, we've gotten some good calls tonight. I think we're ready to pack it in. You guys want to go another hour? What are you, Joe Biden?
It's been a good night.
I'll tell you what. This is what I'll do.
He's looking at his watch.
We'll go for 15. You know what? Let's make it 14 minutes.
Let's make it none.
I'm tired. All right,
I'm tired and cranky. We've been doing radio all night, so... Yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks, folks. Any last words from our Skype people?
stay tuned to hope.net and check out those calls for participation and everything else. If you want to speak, if you have ideas for a village, a workshop, people you think we should get for things like keynotes, whatever your suggestions are, because we're all figuring this out largely from scratch with our new venue, and we don't have all the answers, and we would love to hear your suggestions. Go to hope.net.
I apologize to the person calling in. Maybe you didn't get the message that we're done. We're finished. But thank you. Thank you for listening and for dialing.
We should take it, but no. It to 30 seconds.
You hear this? Is it ringing? 30 seconds? Okay. Caller, you have 30 seconds. Thanks to Alice. Go ahead, quickly.
Yes, hi. About the Hope Conference, will it be entirely in person, or will there be some panels that people can attend virtually?
Wait, you're not Rebel. You sound like Rebel.
Oh, I'm not Rebel, no.
Wow.
I just want to know, okay, will any of the conference be available online or virtual?
Right,
or is
now,
it 100% in person?
Right now, we're planning the in-person part. There's always, the conference is always available in some form online. We're not at that stage yet. Right now, what we have to do is plan the in-person. It's in July, so we have plenty of time for that, and we will certainly talk about that.
Okay, so there will be a hybrid aspect to the conference. Part online and part in person.
It's like no doubt there'll be something. Yeah, it's primarily in person. I think that's probably the best way to phrase it.
I'll keep my fingers crossed I can get a ticket tomorrow.
Okay. Well, yes.
All right, thanks.
All right. There are no tickets are available yet, but they will be in a couple of weeks. Yes. So, anything else before we sign off?
I have a closing thought.
Go ahead, Gayla. And then,
which
then
is the fact that we're preempted next week means that between now and the next time we're back on air is the first Friday of the month.
Oh.
So for next week, don't forget to check out the information about your local 2600 meeting and be safe and be careful.
Yes, the February meetings, I think, we're in better shape than we were in January when we urged a lot of meetings not to meet in person. But Omicron is beginning to fade as predicted, and that's a good thing. So I think a lot of meetings are taking place next Friday.
I just wanted to build or comment on the virtual and hybrid nature of the event. We will do our best to incorporate all aspects of the virtual stuff, but it's primarily about having talks, getting the information out there, sharing in person as much as possible, and you know, we'll do our best. We're going to build on what we've done and see what form it will take, trying to do a little bit of both. No doubt people who cannot be in country will present or otherwise watch and maybe ask questions through our various communications platforms. Really what we're about is tying all of those things together.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like, you know, it gets changes and gets pushed further and further every month or week. So who knows what a virtual space will even be by then? We will be paying attention. We'll incorporate it in some form. And also, if you're not a hacker, be mindful of your computer. You know, yeah, be careful because it might get hacked. And if you are a hacker, make sure that you're out there hacking some things. There's a lot of responsibility, and you know, people are counting on you.
You're talking about in general, right?
Yeah.
In general, people
yeah.
should just be wary and not let things install in their computers and
yeah.
watch the links they go to and all that kind of thing.
It's a wild world these days.
But you know, on the subject of the conference, there's no substitute for being there in person. That is a fact. That's always been the case. So while we will try to do as much online as we can, there's no way it's going to capture the magic. It's not going to capture all the different workshops and hallways and just get-togethers and spontaneous events. And you know, we're very good at documenting what Hope is. And that's why pretty much every talk is available online and on flash drives and everything like that. So we always have that. But what we're organizing right now, what we hope that you join us in is the in-person gathering, the first one, in 4 years. It's going to be awesome.
And with so many new aspects of the space, the venue, neighborhood in general, being back in a physical form after so long, those are the things we want to really emphasize and get your help on and do very well. Capture the recording, stream it, get that info out there. we want people to have that experience, to be up on the latest information and the things that hackers are doing. So, and that's why we're appealing now and in the coming weeks to get ready. Look out for communications and updates from HOPE, and keep checking our hope.net website.
That's right. Hit reload on that. Just keep hitting reload, and you'll see things change. All right, folks. Alex, you have something else?
Well, just, you know, I agree with what you guys said, but just playing devil's advocate here. There's no small talk online. That's one benefit. You can avoid that.
Well, I like small talk.
You like small talk? You like making small talk?
Yeah, I do.
All right.
Small talk is the best talk.
All right. Small talk, big talk. You're for all talks.
Mm-hmm. And who says you avoid small talk online?
I do. It's very easy to do that.
It's easy to do that in person.
Well, by way, but you can't avoid small talk. Unless you're a very rude person, you can't avoid small talk.
Oh, well, that's how then. Okay, at least we figured that out.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? I'm going to avoid any more talk now because we got to go. Thanks, everybody.